to Curmudgeon's Corner. It is Friday, December 5th, 2014. Just about 15:13 UTC as I'm recording this. And yes, it is once again just me. This time, at our normal recording time, Yvonne was sick. And then the next day I wasn't available, so hey, it's just me. And so the usual warning here, if you're one of those guys who's not thrilled about the solo shows, just turn it off. Tune in next week, because I'm going to just start rambling for a while. And, you know, hey, I know it's not as good as the shows where I have somebody else to go back and forth with. It just never can be. You know, you have a conversation with two people, it's more interesting than just one guy yammering and yammering and yammering and yammering. But, you know, hey, I'm going to yammer. So, if you're not into that, we'll see you next week. No hard feelings. We'll talk to you then. In the meantime, I am going to yammer for a while. A few little things on my list for today. One, of course, we will talk about Eric Garner and the latest round of protests around police violence, specifically police violence against unarmed black men. But we got a few other things on the list here. You know, there was a request a while back ago for like movie reviews and things like that from me. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. I haven't gone to the actual theater again, but I watched a few movies at home lately, and I also finished a couple books. So I'll mention those off. As I am recording this, the test flight of Orion is in the air or in the sky or whatever the. In space, whatever. So I may talk a little bit about that. Also, there's a trend that's been going on, and the latest exemplification of it is a Tumblr called Getting Racists Fired, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that phenomenon. Maybe we'll see. We'll see what I feel like. We might touch on the New Republic is a longstanding liberal magazine, and they're going through some major shuffles. And maybe I'll talk about that a little bit. Maybe not. I don't know. Anyway, I'm going to save Eric Garner for the end, just sort of like I did last week. Start off with the lighter stuff. So I'm actually going to start with the reviews. So I looked and said, you know, the last time I mentioned the movies I'd watched at home, I mentioned Taxi Driver, and that was when Bruce was on the show a few weeks ago. So first I'll start with, you know, movies I've watched at home. And so I'll tell you, like, the way I do this is when I sit down and I have a few moments at my computer, which, you know, is just a few hours here and there, whatever, there's at the moment, this varies, but there's a 1 in 13 chance, instead of picking a TV show, I'll pick a movie. And then within that, I have four categories. I have a list of movies I've just, over the years, said, hey, that would be interesting, and thrown it on a list. I've got the AFI list of the top 100 movies of all time that they put out, you know, in the 90s sometime, that I've been working my way through. And I've got a list of sequels. So whenever I watch a movie that has sequels, I'll add the sequel to that list, just so that... if it's a series, I want to watch the whole series, you know? And then finally, I have a list of movies that I actually have in physical form. I own it in one way or another, but have never gotten around to watching. Either they were gifts or whatever. So those are my categories, and I'll pick from one of those four categories, and then I'll pick randomly from one of the items on that list, and then I'll see if it's available, as I mentioned to Bruce, I'll try Netflix, I'll try Amazon, I'll try Xfinity, and then if it's not on any of those, I'll buy it from Apple, and if it's not there, I'll just make a note that it's not there and pick something else to watch. Anyway, I've actually finished up a number of those. I had a few days off and a few weekends where I had a little bit more time than I usually did. And the luck of the draw, I ended up with a string of, getting movies instead of TV shows. So here we go. Since Taxi Driver, I have finished 4 movies. And one was The Little Princess. It's a 1939 movie. It is the last of the big hits that Shirley Temple was in. I guess she was like 9 or something at the time. And anyway, it is a cute little movie, I guess. Basically, her father goes off to war, and she's left in a school for girls, and then it's reported that he was killed in the war, and so she gets demoted from sort of a student at the school to, you know, being responsible for, you know, some of the cleaning and stuff like that, and then she's sure that her father didn't die in the war, so she keeps checking the hospitals and things of people returning from the war to look for her father. And this is a 1930s Shirley Temple movie, so you can probably guess as to the ending what happened. It was a cute little movie. There are a few little songs and things. I would never watch it twice, but it was okay. Anyway, that was number one. That was from my own list, by the way. Somebody gave it to me as a gag gift, I think, a number of years ago. So I had that here. Next, A Clockwork Orange from 1971. That was number 46 on the AFI list. I'll tell you, I was not impressed at all. And I mentioned when I talked to Bruce about Taxi Driver, this sort of 70s vibe, just and something about it doesn't mesh with me, these 70s movies. But, for those who don't know, Clockwork Orange is about basically, you know, a criminal, a guy who goes around and, I guess, you know, it's sort of the aimless youth phenomenon, and him and his gang of friends just go around and for fun, they beat up and rob people and occasionally, rape and kill them as well. That sounds so much fun. Eventually he gets caught and they do various sort of psychological treatments to try to reform him. And that's the bulk of the movie, I guess. I can't say I liked it. I mean, it won all kinds of awards and blah, blah, blah. It just, I didn't like the vision of it. I didn't like the implementation of it. It just sort of was uncomfortable, and not uncomfortable in a way that made you feel like you had, it at least made me feel like I had some sort of new insight into the human condition or something. It just was, you know, a couple hours of, really? Why? And so, no. Unless you're really into that 70s vibe of things, I would just skip A Clockwork Orange. You know, or you're intentionally looking at, you know, classic movies that have won awards and stuff to learn about filmmaking or something. I don't know. But anyway, also one I would not watch again. Next up, another one from the AFI list, number 45 on their list, A Streetcar Named Desire, which I had never seen before. I had never seen any of these movies before, actually. This is a sister comes to visit her other sister in New Orleans and gets involved in their life while she's sort of having a breakdown, and the sister who lives in New Orleans has an abusive husband and all the dynamics thereof. I'm saying this on all these classic movies, but also, sorry, I didn't really get into it. It was okay. It was interesting. There were some dynamics there, but it was another one where I couldn't really relate very much, and it was just sort of, okay, they're having this drama. I don't know. I never connected with it. Sorry. I know it's a classic, and it's a classic play as well. And but nope, sorry, did nothing for me. The last one, also one I hadn't seen before, in its entirety, but I'm pretty sure I'd actually seen most of it in clips and pieces when I'd passed by it on television, which is Basic Instinct from 1992. Which is, of course, what they call an erotic thriller. So there are lots of sex scenes and sort of romantic tension and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, there's a series of murders and who did it. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of characters that have suspicious things about them and which one is really responsible and what's blah, 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 blah. And I won't give away the ending. Yeah, this was better than the other three, I think. Well, at least for me, I enjoyed it better. But I don't really see what the... I mean, I remember this being a big splash when it was out in the 90s. And, okay. It was an okay movie, but I don't see, like, what the big deal really was. I guess, you know, people were really excited about some of the sex scenes, and yeah, okay, there's some nice sex scenes, I guess. And you know, there are a couple of twists and some interesting things going on. So it was a good movie, but I don't know that it lived up to all of the hype that it got way back when, but it was fun. It was worth watching if you're into that kind of movie. And of course, everybody in the universe but me has probably already seen this movie. And I gather this one had a sequel too. I forgot to add it to my list, but I'll check. Like, there was a Basic Instinct too, wasn't there? It probably sucked. But anyway. Oh, excuse me. And that's it for movies. For now, I will mention that the next movie has already come up on my list, and it's going to be a tough one for me. I've started it, but it's really long, and it's a silent movie, and from all reviews, it's incredibly racist, too. Oh, fun. It's Birth of a Nation, which, of course, won the very first Oscar ever, I believe. No, that was Jazz Singer or something. Anyway, it won a bunch of awards very early. It's made as Jazz Singer was the first talkie. Maybe this was the first Oscar. Anyway, it's excuse me, from 1915, and it's like 3 hours long. It's about the Civil War, followed by Reconstruction, followed by the birth of the Ku Klux Klan, with the Ku Klux Klan portrayed in a positive way, from what I gather. The difficulty with this, most of these movies I watch in the background. You know, every once in a while, there's one that sort of demands attention, and I, you know, stop whatever else I'm doing and watch with my full attention. But for most of this, like, TV and movie watching I do at home, I have it up, you know, I have a two monitor set up on my computer at home. I put the movie or TV show up on one monitor and I'm doing something on the other. I'm answering email, I'm reading stuff on the web, I'm working on my election stuff, whatever. And the other thing is up in the other window and I'm listening to it and glancing over when there's visual stuff going on that, you know, is worth seeing. But of course, with a silent movie like this, it's really hard to do that. You have to be looking at it. And it's 3 freaking hours long. So I my strategy, I believe, is to do this in 10-minute segments, 10 or 15-minute segments. And it'll probably take me weeks to get through this damn movie, but I will watch it, damn it. Anyway, that's it for books. No, for movies. Books are next. So books real quick. oh, God. Yeah, apparently, I don't know, getting sick again, allergies, something, whatever. Last time I mentioned that I'd finished My Beloved World, which was, the memoir of, Supreme Court Justice Sotomayor. That was an Audible book, The next Audible book I listened was a very listened to was a very short one. It was less than 2 hours long. Alex Penumbra 1969, which was a sequel to Mr. Penumbra's 24-Hour Bookstore, which I listened to earlier in the year. The 24-Hour Bookstore one takes place in the modern day, and it's a guy in the Silicon Valley area. He gets a job at this bookstore, and it turns out it's connected to all kinds of weird things. There's some sort of code cracking cult that has been working on books in this related to this bookstore for centuries. And he gets connected with people at Google and other places in the tech world, and it was actually pretty cool. I liked the book a lot, so I read. This is actually a prequel, and talks about some things that happened earlier in the history of this bookstore back in 1969, and it was cute. The biggest thing I have against it was actually that it was short. I think it would have been nice to have a prequel or that was as extensive as the original book, which also, by the way, wasn't that long. It was just under an 8-hour audio book. It was cute. It was nice. You fleshed out a little bit more of one of the characters that was in the original book, and filled in some background information. As a standalone, I'm not sure how well it does as a standalone, as sort of an add-on to the original book. It does just fine. And then, this cough is getting to me. What the hell? And then the next one I finished, which I haven't actually officially logged yet on my little log. I need to do that. Is Shadows in Flight, which is the 12th book in the Ender series by Orson Scott Card. Or the 12th book in the Ender universe, I should say. They're actually sort of several intermingled series, blah, 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 whatever. This one was also a fairly short one. This one I actually read in physical form, but it was still a pretty short book. For structure of this, The Ender series, there was recently a movie, Ender's Game, based on the first book, that it has the premise of the first book is there are all these young soldiers that are being trained for a war against alien invaders that are threatening Earth. And one of the main characters, Ender, the first book is the classic in this series. All of the sequels are somewhat interesting, but all of them are eclipsed by that first book. The next few books in the series follow Ender and what happens to him after the war and how he feels about what happened during the war and things like that. Orson Scott Card went back and started doing books about another character in the first book, Bean. The first book in that Bean series actually retold the events of Ender's Game, the first book, through Bean's point of view instead of Ender's point of view. So you're in the same time frame, same things are going on, but it's told through a different character's point of view, which it actually ends up being more interesting than you would think it would be. And then there are a series of books following Bean after the war. The Shadows in Flight, which I finished reading, is one of those in that series. And it's specifically one where Bean and his children have left the Earth and are in a spaceship trying to do studies to figure out a genetic condition they have and try to find a cure, etc., and what happens to them while they're in flight. Oh, Alex woke up. Anyway, with shout it was okay, which is what you can basically say about most of these books in this series after the first few. It was okay, and it was short. But mainly it says, you know, leaves me, okay, well, what's next? The series in general, this was number 12. There's 16 that have already been published at this point, and I guess there are plans for three more after that. I don't know. They've all sort of maintained the level of, this is an okay read. This is kind of fun, but they've never quite gotten up to the level, certainly of the first one, but even the first four were sort of more compelling. And these just sort of seem to be, you know, filling in blanks and continuing along. But you know, they're still sort of okay, worth reading. A fun way to spend you know, a few days of reading in this universe that you've become familiar with by the time you get to this point. One of my complaints in the last few before this one in the series was Card had sort of gotten started to get fairly heavy on you know, the import, yeah, all sorts of themes related to the importance of family and sort of traditional family structure and, you know, procreating and having your genes continue into the next generation, etc. Yes, Alex.
I was going to explain this, but
you found it. Yeah, and there was some of that in this game, but in this book, but it wasn't as heavy as some of the previous ones. Also, of course, I should mention that a lot of people have, you know, viewed negative opinions of Card's work, not necessarily because of the books themselves, but have encouraged boycotts and other things because of his political views. It sort of in the real world as an author, he's fairly right wing, has been outspoken about negatives about what's the right way to characterize it, but his opponents have characterized him as being anti-homosexual, etc., and holding a lot of right, you know, extreme right-wing views, and have been pushing, you know, sort of, you know, don't support Orson Scott Card, don't buy his books, don't go to the movie, don't whatever. And, you know, I probably disagree with Orson Scott Card politically on quite a lot, but if I enjoy the books, I'm going to buy the damn books. And you know, these are okay. My full intention is that having started this series, I will read all the books in this series, catching up, through the present and probably future ones he does, unless it gets to the point where, you know, I'm watching or listening to some of these or reading some of these and I find that I just can't get through them because they're so awful. that just hasn't happened so far. Anyway, 20 minutes on books and movies. I'll move on to other things when I get back. But I have Alex in my lap now, so probably taking a break for this for a little bit. My goal is to, you know, my goal is to try to get up early and get this podcast out before we take Alex to school and then I go to work. Looks like I'm going to end up having to... Oh, I just said school. Alex is upset and I said school. Anyway, I'll probably be a bit later to work than I had intended because I have to finish this thing up. But, you know, there are no meetings on my agenda today, so it should be fun. Anyway, back after this break.
You're in The Valley, AM 1620 and LiganairRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand.
I got a
classic music for a classic American town. AM 1620 and in stereo at LigonierRadio.com. The Valley.
Okay, I'm back. A couple hours later, we took, got Alex ready for school, took him to school. Took my wife's car into the shop. It has a problem with its wipers. Hopefully nothing very serious because it's just the wipers. I'm back, and I really wanted to be starting work right about now, but I'm going to do at least one more segment, and then I'll probably work from home today. I have no meetings or anything, so, and I'll get a lot more work done if I work from home than if I do the commute back and forth. But anyway, whatever. I do want to talk about Eric Garner, but just real quick on some of the other stuff. Orion, during the interim, landed again. It looks like it went perfect. Yay, clap, clap, clap. It's about time. It's a shame that there's this big gap between the shuttle and what we're doing next. But we're finally moving along towards the end of that, both in terms of this, which is the official NASA effort for going really long distances back to the moon, to Mars, to an asteroid, things like that that are being talked about, and the various private efforts to do both suborbital, you know, tourism type stuff like Virgin Atlantic and resupplying the space station and stuff, providing an alternative to Soyuz. They're all moving along, which is great. Nothing much else to say about that. I had mentioned the New Republic. I'm not really going to talk about that. They had a big reshuffle, and the it's owned by some, you know, multimillionaire now, and he's decided to take it in the direction of a vertically integrated new media something 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 something. It's had a long tradition as a print magazine going back over 100 years. And a whole bunch of the editors and staff have resigned over it. But, you know, there are two sides to every story. I mean, on the one hand, it had an interesting long tradition of liberal analysis and policy wonk type articles and things like that. On the other hand, you know, it wasn't really adapting very well to the current environment. It was always struggling for money. It was, you know, all of these kinds of things. So who knows what direction they'll take it. From what the guy said, it almost sounds like he's trying to emulate a kind of BuzzFeed kind of thing, which, you know, you really don't need that. I mean, and look, part of all of these things are, again, I've said this with regard to other ventures. You know, there are some things that are never going to make people tons and tons and tons and tons of money, but are still worth doing, either as a nonprofit or as, you know, a profit-making venture, but one with very limited short, you know, profits that just sort of are enough to keep it going and chug along and maybe a little bit on top. But, and, you know, the sort of special interest magazines, and I think print is completely dead. That's just stupid at this point. But the content, whether it's on, you know, what, regardless of whether it's print or on the internet or whatever, is potentially valuable. But there's this content that's of interest to a small group of people. It's sort of wonkish, long-form stuff. I mean, even you know, I've only very occasionally make the time to read, like, the really long type of articles. And so I'm looking a lot more at the short, bloggy kind of things. But there's value in that long-term stuff, but not necessarily a lot of profitability. So, people are struggling to figure out business models that work, that keep these kinds of things in place. And some of it may end up being completely philanthropic, you know, people with lots of money deciding to do it just because they think it's valuable and never expecting to make a dime. But there may be ways to make some profit, but people have to be willing to, when you're talking about niche audiences, whether it's this kind of stuff or any number of other things, to make a limited profit and not expect it to become, you know, the next big thing. And a lot of people are impatient about that kind of things these days. Okay, that's all I'm going to say about that. So we have getting racist fired and Eric Garner. You know, I'm going to save getting racist fired for a time I can bounce things off of Yvonne. If we talk about that, my basic thought, look, anyway, I will save it. I'm so tempted not to save it and just start talking about it. But, you know, I really got to finish up here and get to work. So Eric Garner and the protests, the bottom line is this is another case where, a police action killed a black man, and yes, people point out that police violence isn't limited to black men. It also applies to black women. It also applies to white people. It applies to everything else. It does happen, but there's a disproportionate there is a very disproportionate racial element here. In this case, the guy had broken up a fight. Somebody had called the police about the fight. They got there. The fight was already over. They saw this guy. They'd previously had numbers of run-ins with him before, where he was illegally selling cigarettes. And they decided they would just bust him for that since they were here. He was verbally upset about it, but not throwing punches or anything. He was a big man. They put him in a chokehold. He had an asthma attack and ended up having a heart attack in the ambulance and dying. Also, of course, after the chokehold, he lost consciousness. There was a delay before any sort of medical assistance was provided. They called an ambulance, but while the ambulance was en route, the police officers at the scene provided no assistance themselves, and in fact stopped a nurse who was just a bystander from intervening when she wanted to. The grand jury came back and said no indictment for this police officer either. The big difference between this and the case in Ferguson is that there was video of the whole damn thing. There were no questions about, he said, she said, with witnesses and the cops saying different things about what happened. None of this. The whole thing is on video. I haven't been able to bring myself to watch the actual video. I've just read descriptions of it, even though it's easily available online. But it seems like this near universal agreement that the police acted improperly here. That there was no situation that, first of all, they, could have been using their discretion, whether or not this cigarette thing was really worth arresting him about anyway, when apparently he wasn't actually doing anything with cigarettes at that time. He was just known for it in the past. And certainly once it was engaged, whether the force was necessary, appropriate, anything else of that sort. And there seems to be near universal agreement that the police went overboard in this case in various steps of the process. And this guy should not have died. And of course, there are protests springing up all over the place. This took place in New York City. So there have been some really large protests in New York City. And there have been, as I speak, 2 days worth of them. And they've been growing each day. I don't know if that trend will continue. But there's been a big difference from Ferguson in that Ferguson took a rapid downhill turn when, after the lack of indictment, there was looting, there was burning, there was arson, there was police cars being turned over, all of this kind of stuff, which, while I understand the anger and frustration, that kind of thing immediately turns people off. It's like, doesn't matter what the original complaint was and what the validity of it. Nobody thinks or talks about that anymore. I shouldn't say nobody, but a vast, large portion of the population immediately says, well, I don't care what the original thing is. This is inappropriate. This is bad. This is, and the focus becomes on that rather than the issue. So far, crossing fingers, the protests related to this latest case, and I shouldn't say latest case, another one happened in Arizona where an unarmed black man was shot by the police with under questionable circumstances just in the last 48 hours as well. But so far, it's all peaceful. It's disruptive. They're closing down roads. They're closing down bridges, tunnels, whatever. But it's peaceful. And the police have been constrained in their responses. There have been some arrests, but very big contrast from Ferguson in that you see you don't see the armored trucks out in force. There are apparently some police in the riot gear type stuff, but they're sort of hanging back. The police that are on the front lines are in their normal uniforms. They're interacting with the crowds. They're putting up barriers ahead of the protesters to sort of block off traffic to keep traffic and the protesters from intersecting, and not necessarily penning off the protesters themselves, although I guess there's been a little bit of that, but mainly just to make sure that there's not opportunity for direct, you know, hey, somebody gets hit by a car because the protesters and the cars are in the same place or whatever. And it's been very orderly for the most part, and the people are making their points and their big crowds and their all of this kind of stuff. And yes, there has been some economic disruptions due to traffic flow. And as I said on the show the other day, I think that's perfectly appropriate, you know? And I understand, you know, people get upset, but the whole point of a protest is to make yourself extremely visible and make it impossible to ignore your cause. Now, of course, there will be some people who just get pissed and say, just like with the arsons and things like that in Ferguson, that, you know, I don't care what the hell their cause was. They made me late to work or whatever. But I think that's, you know, that's part of the ebb and flow of the protest, and that's a natural part of the political process, and I think that's perfectly fine. And as I said last week, I think, you know, authorities for the most part should let this kind of thing happen. They should, you know, just like I was saying during the Occupy series, you know, this is free speech at its best. And if this was happening in any other country whatsoever, we would be all about supporting the protesters and keeping the government from interfering and et cetera, et cetera. So as long as it remains peaceful, I think this should be allowed to go. And if it brings more attention to these kinds of issues, so much the better. I mean, this is, you know, when you look at the statistics, there is clear, it is clear that there's lots of cases of law enforcement exceeding what would be a reasonably proper authority, and that it is disproportionate against blacks, and in some cases some other minorities, but primarily blacks, and also disproportionate in economically disadvantaged neighborhoods, et cetera, which very often coincide, but not always. It's a mess. And it's something we should be looking at. We talked before about body cameras. This was a case where there was video of the whole damn thing. And there was still no actions against the police officer in question. No criminal case. I don't know that there was anything else. If there was a reprimand or something, I'm actually not sure about that. But he's still under force. And it seems like as I said before, you know, body cameras and videotaping in general aren't going to quote unquote solve this issue on their own, although it has been shown that in a number of municipalities that have added them, complaints about police violence have dropped precipitously, both because the police are more aware and also because the public is more aware, and so they're less likely to sort of escalate situations from that side as well. In any case, it does seem to work for reducing this problem. It won't solve it, though. To solve it, you really have to bring in, how do you hold the authorities accountable for their actions? That involves, you know, figuring out the conflicts of interest in the system. Like, for instance, right now, the prosecutors who get to decide whether to charge police officers are the same people who work with those very same police officers, very same police organizations all the time in their prosecutions of regular criminals. And it would hurt them to hurt their relationship with the police force. So it seems clear you need some sort of outside independent evaluation of these cases, and you need just generally far different standards about what's okay. And I don't want to repeat too much of what I said last week, but you have to move the general stance of the police from being a one that is accepting of using force against the public to one where that really is an extraordinary thing that it only happens in the most extreme situations. I mean, you should never be talking about deadly force when you're chasing somebody for a robbery, for instance, ever. You know, unless they are actively going after you with a weapon themselves. You know, officers need to be trained on de-escalation and also, you know, choosing your battles. You know, force is acceptable when it's being used in order to prevent someone from harming the public. It should not be acceptable when someone's fleeing after having already committed a crime. You know, so, I don't know. And that what I just articulated is not the existing standard by any means. But I think, you know, I don't know. I think it's all very warped right now. In general, our system is warped by, you know, the drug war and other things. I mean, when you look at the total number of people incarcerated, it's insanely high in this country, and it is disproportionately black. And we're doing something very wrong with that, because at the same time, crime rates have been dropping and dropping and dropping and dropping, but we haven't been reacting appropriately. I mean, you could make the argument, well, crime rates are dropping because we have all these people in jail, but I think there's plenty of evidence that that's not the direct correlation. Anyway, that's it. I hope that I'm always optimistic that these kinds of things will lead to actual change, but I don't really believe it. They tend to be a flash in the pan, and people get upset, and you know, and then it a couple months later, no one's talking about it anymore. The problem hasn't really fundamentally changed. There have been no systematic big changes to try to address the problem. What does happen gradually over long periods of time is that attitudes slowly change. But attitudes changing, which result in better results often, also often take many generations. It's not something that happens in 1 or 2 years. It happens when you have people growing up in different environments with different expectations, and you know 15, 20 years later they become police officers and bring that new attitude to bear. That takes a long time. Anyway, I think I'm going to close it up. even though this is relatively short here, like I said, I'll wait to talk about getting racists fired and similar things some other time with Yvonne, or maybe we'll never get to it. Bottom line, I don't like it. I think the sort of public shaming, and it's fine to point out that somebody is acting atrociously, but I think that there should be a fundamental separation between work and home. It's one thing where you're sort of the public face of a company, and you have political views that make the customers of your company unhappy and start affecting your performance on the job and your ability to do things. It's completely and totally different, if you're the guy at the counter at McDonald's and you happen to be posting racist crap on your Facebook or something. The guy's onerous, but it's none of McDonald's business, and he shouldn't be fired over that. It doesn't affect his job. Again, unless, he's doing that in such a way that it's affecting his on-the-job performance. He's wearing a button professing his racist views or something. But other than that, look, there should be a fairly hard separation of, your work life and your personal life, unless you are in a job that specifically makes those things public and part of your ability to defend your job. So anyway, that's all I'm going to say. See, I had to get something in anyway. Anyway, we're closing it up. Thank you very much for joining us on another Curmudgeon's Corner. Hopefully next week, Yvonne will actually be back and we'll have a normal show again. And we're getting close to the end of the year, so it's going to be time soon for our prediction show and our review of the predictions for this year. I think we're going to reverse the order this time so that the last show of 2014 will be predictions for 2015, and the first show of 2015 will be review of our predictions for 2014, because that way we make sure we do the predictions before the year actually starts, and we do the evaluation after the year actually ends. In the past, we'd always sort of reversed that, and so on our review show, we'd always be like, unless that changes in the next few days, and that was kind of lame. But on the other hand, it's nice to do the review of last year before doing the next. Anyway, whatever, we'll figure it out. Anyway, it's coming up soon. That's one of the highlights of the year for us. We always have a lot of fun with the predictions. Anyway, thanks again, have a great week. I'm Abelsmay at abelsmay.com. I'm at Abelsmay on Twitter. Yvonne's at IMBo on Twitter. We love to hear from you. Tell your friends. Okay, now have a good week. We're out of here. Goodbye. Or I'm out of here, not we, because it was just me.